Everyone, I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I have with me Izzy from Contemporary Insurance. We've done a few interviews together already. He is a wealth of knowledge. He helps with malpractice for midwives all over the country, and he is an attorney. So you get both perspectives. You get the insurance side, and you get some of that legal advice that we as midwives we need, but we don't. We need an expert to help us out with guidance. So thank you, Izzy, for joining us today.
My pleasure. I actually enjoy doing these as well. So it's a lot of fun for me.
So if nobody has seen your last videos before, do you want to do a high level introduction to who you are?
Sure. So I'm a broker. I'm also an attorney, although I don't practice anymore. Our agency is Contemporary Insurance Services in Silver Spring, Maryland. Founded it about 40 years ago. It's a small agency. It's about 10, 12 people, including one of my boys and a partner. We specialize. We have a program that is geared towards midwives nationwide. There are a couple of states that we don't access that program in, New York and New Mexico, but we have other products for those states. We developed this program from scratch. We actually wrote the policy that provides the insurance for the midwives. So it's the only product that's actually tailored and written for midwives and designed for them. So for example, one of the issues that comes up often is whether when you cancel a policy, should you get tail coverage? We designed the policy so that the tail coverage is a fraction of the price that other insurance companies charge, because we knew that midwives can't afford a higher price. We were able to convince the company to do that. Other things that we were able to do that most companies have not been able to are things like coverage for VBACs. So we were able to explain to the insurance company that we were working with, that we started with this with 40 years ago, that midwives are no different professionals than physicians. Nobody tells physicians what to do. Why should anybody tell midwives what to do? And if a midwife feels that a VBAC is appropriate, there should be no exclusion for it. The same for home births. And our companies have agreed with us. And so our policy tends to be the most comprehensive in terms of coverages that allow midwives to do what they want.
Well, and I think it's amazing. There's a few companies across the country that specialize in malpractice for midwives and truly understand midwives. So I'm so grateful for what you do, Izzy. Thank you. One of the topics I know from last time, and even just I've been doing a lot of consults lately, that there's a consistent theme of questions or misunderstandings around malpractice insurance. So before, I sent you an email with just a list of ideas of myths that midwives have around malpractice insurance. Some of them might be true, some of them may be some misunderstandings, or there's just a rumor spreading that's just escalating. And the reason I want to emphasize malpractice insurance so much is because when I run midwifery business consulting, I want successful, thriving midwifery practices. And if you don't have the foundation, you don't have malpractice, you don't have disability, you don't have life insurance, you don't have this foundation, your business structure is very fragile. I know of lots of practices all over the country. They're very successful. They're making money. They don't have malpractice insurance. And all it takes is one outcome, whether they did anything right or wrong, and the practice is gone. And that to me is very, very fragile. So a lot of we'll start with the first one, that midwives just talk about the cost so often. It costs too much. It costs too much. And I always try to get them into the business mindset, return on investment. What are you getting? Yes, it's an expensive premium compared to your other services you're paying for, but what are you getting for it? So if you want to talk about the cost component, I would love for you to start there, that it's too expensive. I can't afford it.
Okay. So I'm actually going to move that line a little further back to give to try to give your members an understanding of how rates are set, so that they'll have a better sense. So the truth of the matter is, one can practice without insurance in most states, not all states, but in most states, one can practice without insurance. You run a risk. I will tell you that in 9 cases out of 10, that you have a horrible outcome in, none, whether there was negligence or not, if you don't have insurance, you're not going to get sued. So there you go. I mean, there's from a broker telling you straight out that if you don't have insurance, you're not going to get sued. Why? So I'll tell you, and the reason is actually very simple. Big law firms that specialize in big cases spend a lot of money to go after a claim. And they don't know ahead of time whether that claim is going to result in a 35% payoff for them, or not. So they have to weigh a case and decide, am I going to sue this midwife? Am I going to win? So the first that's the first question. And then for that, they actually go out. And before they've even gotten a penny from anybody, they've spent $10,000, $20,000 getting expert opinions that say, yes, this is winnable, or no, this is not winnable. And then, of course, they're going to file a lawsuit against you. And the first thing they're going to find out is whether you have insurance, because it's part of the discovery process that they're entitled to get. If they find out you don't have insurance, then they've got to spend a ton of money to go after somebody who probably doesn't have a lot of assets. Now, we've worked with thousands of midwives. I can tell you there are some midwives that are quite wealthy and love what they do, and they do it whether it's for the money or not for the money. They need insurance because they're worried about protecting their assets. Most midwives don't have $1 million to go after, which is what most policies offer in coverage. So the lawyer has to say, well, if I win, I still lose because I get nothing. Okay, so in most cases with really bad outcomes, what you're going to find, and the law firms won't even take cases that don't have really bad outcomes because they can't get a big enough judgment to support the fee. So generally speaking, what you'll find is a law firm that looks at a case against a midwife with a baby. Let's say you had a maternal death, God forbid. You had an abruption, and the abruption, you did everything according to Hoyle. You followed the rules. Everything was done. Well, the big law firms know that even though you may not have been negligent, the odds are the insurance company is going to pay off, because the insurance company is going to say, jury is going to find against us just out of sympathy. But if there is no insurance company, that law firm is going to say, why am I doing this? So you're right. 9 times out of 10, that's what's going to happen. But that's assuming that the patient went to a big law firm. Now, I should tell you that I'll back up a little bit on that and say that in most cases where there's a lawsuit, the lawsuit is not just against a midwife. It's against a midwife, maybe a collaborating physician, maybe a hospital that ultimately got the baby or the mother. And of course, if things went south, they went south and continue to go south at the hospital. So the lawyer may say, you know what? It doesn't cost me anything to keep the midwife in the suit, even if she's not there. And what I would tell you is that the experience is so damaging that every midwife is going to want to defend herself in the suit. They're not going to say, well, you can't get anything, so take a default judgment against me, because a default judgment sits on everything you own forever. I'm on a conference, so okay. Hold forever. Is that, sorry about that.
Yeah. No worries.
So they can keep you on the suit. Eventually they'll probably drop you off, but in the meantime, you're kind of dangling there. So that's the big law firm. Now, what about the guy who advertises around 2 o'clock in the morning that says, if you have a phone, you have a lawyer? And I think we've discussed that guy before in a previous conversation. He's going to sue you, because all he sees is big dollar signs. It doesn't cost him very much to sue you, because he'll find somebody of his who's a doctor to be an expert. So he'll get past the first level that's required to file the claim. And then he'll go after you. And then you will find yourself in a situation where he might be happy to get $35,000, $40,000 from you. And the odds are, if you have a house, if you have a car, if you have any assets, those are all reachable, because there is no protection, whether it's through an LLC or a corporation, from acts of malpractice. Malpractice is a personal liability that can't be protected, even if you operate as an LLC. And that guy will sue you, and he'll keep you in court, and you'll be miserable, and you don't have the cost of defense. So you will write checks to a lawyer to defend you, because you don't want to have a default judgment. And in that situation, you're going to be dangling there. So then the next question is, well, what if I'm in a community that's a religious community, like, you know, the Amish or the Methodists and the like, and there's a sense of community, and they probably won't sue me? Not necessarily true. I have seen many suits, particularly where the outcomes are grievous. So, for example, if you have a maternal death, if you have a baby born with cerebral palsy, and you know that that baby is going to need a lifetime of care, where suddenly it's not inexpensive for that either surviving husband or mother with a child that's going to need long-term needs, to be approached by someone who says, you know, you could get this paid for. And she'll say, well, it's not part of my it's not my makeup, but she has 21 years to change her mind and sue you, because the statute of limitations lasts almost forever for children. So in that type of a setting, the bottom line is you need to know that you could get sued. And if you get sued, you're not going to want to take a default judgment against you, because then that judgment sits on you for the rest of your life until it's paid off. And for that reason, everyone needs malpractice insurance now. So the question is, well, why can't the malpractice insurance company make the premium acceptable to me? You know, I'm not making $120,000 a year net. I'm maybe making $40,000 a year. In fact, maybe I'm a home birth midwife and I'm making $18,000 a year net. And I can't afford a $10,000 premium. So the answer is the insurance companies are largely unsympathetic. And the reason they're unsympathetic is that premiums aren't decided by the insurance companies, they're decided by actuaries. And what an actuary does is it goes out and looks at all the experience that a particular specialty has and what is the likelihood of claim. So in the 40 years that we've been doing malpractice insurance, I can tell you that we've had over 40 claims resolved at $1 million. Okay, so if you do your math, and there are only maybe 7,000 midwives out there who are providing services, and if you have that $1 million claim plus a bunch of smaller claims and divide that by the 7,000, you find out that you land up with a premium that is often not sustainable. But it's not because the insurance companies are unsympathetic. It's really because they are in the business of making a profit. They will provide, those few that provide insurance to midwives try to make a profit on it. It doesn't have to be double digit or triple or quadruple digit rate of return on your investment, but it needs to be enough for them to be able to make it worthwhile for them to be in that business. And they have to pay legal fees and pay all these. Now, what I will tell you, all malpractice insurance companies have the same experience. The most money they pay out in judgments and settlements. The second most they pay out, believe it or not, is expenses of defense, legal fees, expert witnesses. And even though they have special arrangements with attorneys because they give them millions of dollars of legal fees, it's still very, very expensive to defend those costs and to take it from there. So that's why the cost of defense and the cost of coverage is so high. Now, you could say, well, I do home births and my risks are lower. So the interesting thing is that I believe the studies have shown that hospital births, birth center births, and home births have a similar degree of bad outcomes and volatility. So from the insurance company's point of view, that's fine. What the insurance company says with home births often is that, well, yes, the risk is the same across all three, but at the end of the day, a bad outcome in a home birth may take a little longer to get into a hospital than a birth that starts in a hospital. All that having been said, 7,000 midwives is not enough for an actuary to truly figure out what the right premium is. What they can figure out is each year, taking a look at what their losses are, have they kept their head above water for the profession of midwifery? And if not, are they going to adjust their premiums to get there? So at the end of the day, the insurance is not about whether it can be affordable. Truth of the matter is, if you think about it, when you shoot off rockets, the cost of insurance for each of those rockets could be the millions of dollars. But one bad outcome could cost a company $500 million. And so and they're going to price their policies based on the number of rockets that go off. And if they can't make a profit, rockets will be uninsured. And the same is
true. And I like to compare when I talk about midwives, like health insurance. We think, oh my goodness, health insurance is so expensive. That insurance company has to give you coverage for if you just go to a doctor for a routine visit, or all of a sudden you get in a car accident or in NICU. They have a wide range of what they could potentially cover and pay for you. So it costs more. Like it's hard. People are like, well, I'm low risk healthy. I rarely ever go to the doctor. You're paying for the pool. You're paying to contribute contribute, to be part of it. You don't know. You might get in that car accident, that one in a million terrible thing, and you're so grateful you have that high range of coverage. And I think it's interesting when you talk insurance risk, midwives think of low risk. Well, I'm low risk healthy. I do out of hospital birth, so my risk must be lower than a hospital birth midwife. But like you said, it's all an algorithm. They look at the statistics. Insurance companies are really good at their calculations because that's how they make money.
That's correct. And it's really as close to statistically viable as makes sense. But again, the entire universe of midwives is so small for statistical purposes that they do the best they can to make it work. And at the end of the day, you know, the companies do an excellent job on defense, and it's important to be there. Now, I would just say I think we all think of, because we're Americans, we think of things as businesses, and it's something that we take a look at. I think we have to remember where insurance came from. Insurance came from early on, a group of people together realized two things. One, they were going to have some kind of a bad outcome, whether it was a business bad outcome or a shipping bad outcome or railroad or trucking bad outcome. And they needed to know that they could pool that risk amongst themselves. So they created cooperatives to share that risk. But they also understood one other thing, and that was if the trucker is driving down the road and kills somebody, well, that somebody's family should be compensated. And so in addition to protecting the assets of the trucker, it also compensates someone for a mistake that was made, because you know what? Mistakes happen. So at the end of the day, someone makes a mistake, you want to have it covered. Now, because of the way our judicial system works, it's not all about mistakes. If you have a bad outcome, a jury can decide, mm-hmm. we want to compensate because that poor mother and father are going to have a real hard time. Insurance companies have deep pockets, so let's go ahead and provide a judgment. And that's where it goes. So that's really, in a nutshell, looking at the insurance piece. Now, as far as a business piece, I can't afford it. I got it. I get it. Yeah. You know, my advice as an attorney before I did insurance was to say people that a business has to be intrinsically viable. Yep. If a business isn't viable, why are you doing it? So if it's a hobby, okay, then say it's a hobby. If it's a business, then it's a business. So if you're in the business of midwifery, you've got to charge pricing that allows you to cover your expenses to make a profit. If you're in the hobby of midwifery,
midwives about creating fee schedules, and because a lot mm-hmm. of them will just say, well, all the midwives in our area charge $3,000, $4,000. So I'm also going to charge that rate. And so I try, we have a Facebook group, we have a lot of great resources, and trying to give education. Each person's fee schedule is going to be different based on their education, their risk, their area, who they serve, their staff structure. But that's part of that advanced business education that I'm trying to help midwives. Like, you have to, if you feel this is important, you feel like having these amazing resources and people and services under your team, your staff, malpractice, we now have to adjust your fee schedule and services to represent that, versus you picked $3,000. And now we're trying to play the puzzle of how do we fit in all these apples and oranges into this box you've already created. It should be reversed. So that's a lot of that business education I do with the midwives and talking, especially when they're a new practice. Like, we have the opportunity to, let's look at your overhead expenses. Why do you want this? Why do you not want this? And now let's make your fee schedule to represent that overhead.
Correct. And what I would do is I would say that I've counseled a lot of midwives over the years that complained about the fact that they can only get so much from a delivery. And then what I would say is, in every business out there, there are two things that the business does. One, it provides its specialty. And the second thing that it does is it cross sells. It sells other products and other services to its patients. And in providing the cross selling, it is opportunistic, because I have the opportunity to sell you this because I'm in your face and I have the ability to do that. But it's also providing a service, because you're not hard selling. You're providing services, and whether you're never going to, because of who you are, and it's particularly true for midwives, you're never going to try to sell a patient something they don't need. But your patients are buying these other things. So to the extent that you can provide these other things through your service and get compensated for it and make more money, there is literally no reason not to do it.
That's the other piece of the puzzle. I talked to him. Multiple revenue streams. You have a service line. Okay, maybe this service line can't cover that overhead because of competition based on insurance reimbursement. Like you said, adding, if they're already ordering supplements and they're doing it online or they can't wait 2 days, they don't feel like with their kids screaming, they want to stop to the pharmacy or stop to the drugstore on the way home. Like a lot of midwives will have little supplement boutique shops or herbalists, or they'll have doulas or lactation. They'll have other services with in their stream, or they do a little less burst and they do some more GYN stuff that maybe based on that revenue value unit to an insurance company is a little more profitable for the time. So there's definitely ways, and that's why I'm so passionate about what I do. And I'm so grateful you're out there as a resource for midwives as well, because maybe you truly can't afford it, but can we creatively restructure your branding, your business for some services? You're referring somebody to get this all day long. How about you have it under your umbrella so they can just see that person in the room next door versus you send them across the street?
Correct. Absolutely correct. And it's a concept that many midwives come to the business from their heart. They don't come to it from business. Having said that, the most successful midwives add business and heart, and they're able to make it work. And like I say, over the 40 years that we've been serving midwives, we've come into contact with thousands, large and small. I mean, I have midwives that do 3 births a year, and then I have midwives who do 40 births a month.
It's insane what some of the volume and what they can handle with their teams. Yeah.
Right. And at the end of the day, I believe that they're all good. I mean, those that have 15 claims each, we won't insure. So, but you rarely see someone with a lot of claims. What I would also say is that even if you've been in practice for 10 or 15 years and you've never had a claim, statistically, if you do enough births, or even if you don't do enough births, statistically, you're going to get hit with a bad outcome, whether you were negligent or not. And in defending that bad outcome, the jury may not care whether you were negligent or at fault. They may assume wrongly, because the jury can't be told whether there's insurance or not. The lawyers can know, but the jury can't. The jury will assume that since you're in the field of medicine, you have insurance. So you'll outsmart them by making them sign a letter that says, I acknowledge that I don't have insurance. Having said that, when and if they sue you, the jury still won't know that you don't have insurance. And so in that case where you inform the patient knows you don't have insurance, you get a fly-by-night attorney who doesn't care about, you know, $1 million, he's happy with $30,000, you find yourself uncovered. Now, the last thing that is, of course, many situations, if you require a collaborating physician in your community, the collaborating physician may require that you include the physician on your policy. Those are very, that coverage, it's called vicarious liability coverage, is very easy to add to policies. It may increase the premium anywhere from 0 to 15%, but it provides protection for that doctor because the doctor can be found to be vicariously liable for your acts since he or she is your collaborating physician.
Yeah, if you want to expand on vicarious liability, I think there's a lot of myths and misunderstandings about that, because depending on, like, I've collaborated with so many amazing physicians, and each insurance rep for either their company or my company will have inconsistent actions, because it really comes down to the opinion and interpretation of the court. So we're trying to be conservative and cautious. Can you expand on vicarious liability a little more?
So yes, so the standard language in many policies is any suit against you for your acts or the acts of someone for whom you're responsible. Okay, well, that becomes tricky for acts for whom you're responsible. So we put it in this very typical setting. If I own a birth center with 5 midwives, okay, and it's not corporate, we're all together, and you're my employee. I have myself as the owner. I have 4 midwives that are employed by me. One of the midwives gets sued. Well, I'm the boss because I own the birth center. I'm the captain of the ship. And because of that, I'm going to get sued because I'm responsible for your acts as your employer. That's vicarious liability. I didn't do anything, nothing. I just hired you. And suddenly I'm getting sued. And why am I getting sued? Because I made the decision to hire you. I'm responsible for your acts. And that's called vicarious liability. Now, if I had seen that patient, then it's not vicarious anymore. Now it's direct. Right. But since But if, since a suit again may name me because I'm responsible, I'm the captain of your ship. Even though I never saw that patient, never did an intake, never saw them when you were sick or couldn't come to the office, I may well be named, and that creates vicarious liability. In a collaborating physician setting, that extends that responsibility one step further. So in states that require a collaborating physician, there is an implication. It's not always stated, but there's an implication that because I'm a collaborating physician, I'm responsible for any suits against you, because you should have collaborated with me, or I should have told you that when you have an abruption, call me immediately. Well, everyone knows when you have an abruption, it doesn't do any good to call your collaborating physician. But at the end of the day, the jury may not see it that way. So that collaborating physician is now going to be sued for his or her vicarious exposure to as your collaborating physician. And because of that, many malpractice insurance companies that insure physicians will not cover the collaborating physician for his or her collaboration. Our policies will, and most of the policies that are out there will, recognizing that it's the same lawsuit. So, I mean, and it's usually the same pot of money that's available for both the midwife and the collaborating physician. So that's there. So that's what vicarious liability seems like, puffy stuff like, you know, smoke and mirrors, but it really isn't. It's basically what lawyers will do, plaintiff's lawyers, try to collect and to aggregate as much money as they can in a winning outcome. And that's why it's rare to see just a midwife sued. Usually you'll see a midwife, you'll see a second midwife, maybe covering for her. You'll see maybe a birth center if it's a separate corporation. You'll see a hospital, because almost all bad outcomes end up in the hospital. You'll see a physician that wasn't attending at the hospital. Suddenly I've gone from one midwife who's got no money to five policies worth $5 million. Now that's a whole different lawsuit. So then I say to myself, okay, why am I keeping this midwife on here? Well, the answer very simply is because the negligence, I need her testimony to show who was negligent and who wasn't. And in fact, because I'm the plaintiff's attorney, because I know you don't have insurance, I'm going to try to get you to point your finger to the collaborating physician in the hospital and say, I did everything right. It was the hospital that messed up. And of course, the hospital is going to do the reverse and say, no, we're not going there. You did everything wrong. And the plaintiffs, they benefit from that discussion back and forth. So you might find yourself getting sued and losing. Maybe you'll get dismissed, maybe not, depending on the law firm that's representing the plaintiff.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's really important to talk about some of these barriers. Midwives have a hard time finding collaborating physicians. They have a hard time when they're negotiating a contract, they're having discussions with physicians. A lot of the physicians don't know as much about the vicarious liability. There's more fear making decisions versus objective resources. So I think this is very powerful, because midwives, they think, well, I want them to help me out because this is important for safe quality of care for transfers. We have to think the way they're thinking. If you're negotiating with a physician, you have to think, what are their fears? What are their worries? You can offer them all the money under the world, but if there's some strong, they just got sued and they understand clearly vicarious liability, you want to make sure you have policies and you can approach those terms of your contract knowing, here's my policy, here's what it says. Let's add this to your policy so that we're both protected. It's going to get you leaps and bounds a better chance of collaborating relationships and getting them established, because I know that's very hard to do for a lot of midwives.
Right. So what else will say is that there is a nationwide move, too slowly, but a nationwide move to get rid of collaboration requirements and to recognize for NPs, PAs, and CNMs that collaboration is not required. And in fact, collaboration is nothing but a piece of paper. Having said that, in the meantime, that piece of paper creates liability. So in most cases, a physician who can't get this exposure added to his or her policy, we can take care of that by adding it to our policy. Okay. And the physician knowing that they're covered. And I think that's probably true of most of the policies that are out there for midwives, that they're going to add it. They may make a charge for it, they may not, depending on what the underwriting requirements are for that particular situation. But definitely, you're right. Your client needs to know the business of insurance as a piece of the coverage. And you need to work with a broker who has years of experience and can explain to you what you need to explain to your physician, or how to create a creative solution to, you know, often someone will come back to you and say, I don't want to do it because of this. And your job, my job and any other broker's job is to say to you, you know what, I can't cover that at all. Or here's a solution that we can find to do it. And I will tell you, out of every 1,000 times I've had to create something, there may have been one or two where we haven't been able to fashion a solution. And sometimes we can't fashion a solution because the physician isn't interested in a solution. They just don't want, they're looking for a way to say no that doesn't make it seem like it's not their fault. But at the end of the day, you need to know that and you need to move on. I have seen practices close for want of a collaborating physician.
Yeah.
So it's a real issue.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time greatly, Izzy. You're a wealth of knowledge. How can other midwives, birth professionals connect with you if they have more great questions? I know that's one of your big strengths is you have a heart of gold and you can help them out on the phone and get to the best solution for their needs.
That's correct. We do not charge for advice. Any midwife that calls us, the number they can reach us at is 301-933-3373. They can go to our website, which is cisinsurance.com. And they can get quotes off of that website. And I invite midwives who are just starting out, students who are graduating and having their first set of negotiations with their employers. Call me. I'm happy to take the time to talk with you. What should you ask your physician? What are the benefits of knowing ahead of time in discussions about claims made and occurrence policies? And we're happy to do that. And Leslie, we very much appreciate the opportunity to meet your clients and to speak with them. And thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Well, remind me, I'm going to write it down, Izzy, for our next talk. I definitely want to talk about the malpractice risk for being an employer versus employee, because I think there's a lot of misunderstandings like, oh, they hired me, I'm okay, versus you are the boss. So I think that'll be a perfect topic for next time.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a great rest of your day, Izzy.
You too. Bye-bye now.